radicality, or why culture is being radicality, or why culture is being structured. To put it simply, culture, usually understood as human expression, is actually being or existence, and the structuring of this. Culture is not just the produced expressions of humans and their inhuman apparatuses. It is the impressed forces and structuring administrations upon it all. Just as biologists call the gels that grow bacteria cultures, you can think of the motive force of the reproduction of society, its culture. What is radical in this? Normally, reproduction is thought of as virtuous and a great goal, and culture is respected through traditions and pedagogy. Radicality, however, says that existence and its structuralizing agent, culture, need to be changed, even if they do not apparently want to, else life on Earth will die. Being is structured because radicality, a difference that makes a difference, is under surgical, engineered repression in order to further the capitalist omega point state whose future wished for structure we will leave to your speculation. However, culture is not homogeneous, all the same. In other words, there are antagonisms inherent. Heterogeny says all is not lost. What is schizophrenia? Perhaps, as a disorder of thought, it is the one thing capable of taking us beyond conventional wisdom, mired as this wisdom is in presuppositions and false conceptions, pap and falsity. Sane people's writing makes sense, but its real radicality must be questioned. What is radicality? It is obviously something different from the norm, business as usual. It is a difference also which is instrumental. It makes a difference in things, in the world, even. How can radicality be reached? Is this approach to reality merely a matter of style, as some critics would have us believe? Or does content have a part? Talking about anything interesting, you're not allowed to talk about it interestingly. Intentional radicality, with the understanding of intention as representation, and representation as intention, says that structurism dictates a minimality, adherence to a philosophy of minimalism, of structure. Some would like to escape from the conceptual shells, the meaning bonds. It can seem that nothing anyone else writes is important after you have reached a certain level of understanding. Everything other people write becomes transparent because it is as other. In any case, philosophizing is, in a sense, the process of deconditioning the reader to the import of all the terms used by the author, so the reader can then write them herself. Sexual taboo is the only thing that cannot be explained away. Society does not wish to grow beyond its taboos. It does not even wish really to be reminded of their nature. Culture is the site of desire, seems to be the current fashionable idea. But what about the human body? They say we do not desire literal bodies or body parts, and that writers are really cutting out paper penises and vaginas. What about the language structure of structure? Language structure is a shorthand for culture. Life, it is a constant process of deconstruction and reconstruction of one's coping skill set. The structures one utilizes to supplant the forces attempting to overcome one's survival. Mentalico linearization, Menlin, and personal survival in psychosis. Mentalico linearization, Menlin, is a survivalistic mode of comportment for sufferers of psychosis. Development narrativization, Menlin, is an internal method of proceeding with the truth ordering of neurosignaletic material, which disposes in large part with the tempora ordering of media signaletic material, the familiar modes of audio, visual, textual data representing. Psychotic sufferers notice devolution of their personal lives, chaotic adevelopment, a dissubjectivization, very disturbing. What has before been called self-talk or internal narrativization, Menlin is the more correct term, referencing as it does the reality, for it is neither talk nor narrative. It is not out loud talking or continuous narrative. The old terms had some merit, for it can be thought as an internal self mechanism. However, this borders on the vague. I will start over and unfold each term. Menlin is what you can think linguistically, imagizing or imagining steps along an internal conceptual pathway as a mode of comportment or action, praxis, methodology. It is survivalistic. It has been found by the author to reverse tendencies as strong as suicidal depression and existential angst in general. The self, which is disconstructed by psychosis, is redeveloped by the sufferer himself with unspoken, silent narrativization. Not by reading, writing, speaking, or listening, looking. Thinking, in short, is the key. This I call neurosignaletic material because it references the content as such of the neuronal pathways or conceptual channels in the brain. The alternative, externality or media signaleticity, is all too familiar to us and all too ineffectual. Menlin results in positivization. The self-tarrying Menlin encourages is a new standard of spiritualization, the an-automatic praxis that extensivizes subjects which unfold in themselves. This Hegelian term only means consciousness is an-topological. There is no outside to it. It is utterly personal and exceeds conditioning in a newfound exercise of will that teaches true aloneness, true negation of negativity. Self-evolutionality can be the only result of such a neuro-energetic, active following of the grail of exquisite... The terminology of recovery. Writing from a viewpoint or position is, in a sense, developing or expressing a rationale for why one should be read. Don't many viewpoints exist? And aren't many of these other viewpoints no doubt more sophisticated or learned than one's own? After all that has been written, why more? Why now? I shall attempt to give a convincing rationale, of course. The terminology of recovery is a title which speaks of a logic, the logic of the terms or categories used in overcoming whatever mental disease. I felt it needed to be written because I did not see anything quite like it, and it is only now arriving because I have now reached the cognitive level which made its composition as is possible. Many strange ideas regarding language are found in the philosophical literature, which has always seemed to me the most expressive of the full range of human endeavor, such as philosophy should involve only sayable things, or the opposite, our task is to utter the unutterable. But what is this dispute about? The personal idiosyncrasies of Wittgenstein and Adorno? Or something like a verbal taboo, the you can't say that rule? Or a conceived radicalism, I can say what no one else can? One can go on and on about the possibilities for language, but that is not my intention here. I only mean to remind us that there is dispute at even the very highest levels on any issue, especially infinite issues like speech and terminology. So do not be surprised when you find me writing strange things here. It is necessary if we want to both reference and overcome the existing tradition, whose efficacy is put into at least some doubt when we realize that a large portion of thought disorder sufferers attempt suicide. We may as well begin with an exclusion, that what is no use to recovery is no use to us. Another way of saying this is to say that omega value shall be our guiding thread. Science-minded thinkers have posited an omega point when humanity is in control of nature. So any reference to omega something generally refers to a sort of ultimate goal or worldly telos. The most sophisticated things we can contemplate are generally good indicators as to our functionality, the quality of our recovery. Thus, a philosophical awakening or education seems almost a requirement for sufferers of brain disease. The analogy used by therapists that the brain acts like a muscle, which weakens when not activated by cognitive stimulation, is useful. Obviously, we all have different concepts about what stimulates, but in general, it is agreed that the highest achievements of philosophical thought fit the bill cognitively, if one understands them. This is why I place great value on experientiality, on the conscious perception of the flow of human existence, down to the minutest detail in all its reality. Relating to thought, on my view, a concept which you do not recognize consciously as such, which you merely scan over in passing, does not form part of your experience, and you cannot learn from it. I will not attempt to give a philosophical education here, though I will make a small effort in that direction And perhaps the way to begin doing this is by the interrogation of your terms. For instance, with regard to motivation, or what I, using terminological freedom, refer to as executivity or executive function, we may ask, who is in complete control, or what? It is too often taken for granted that we are self-transparent subjects, spirits or cognitivities, minds, in other words. But a simple structural analysis yields cracks in this assumed edifice of self, such as the obvious truth that there are many different parts of the brain and, indeed, the mind. To assume they smoothly integrate is asking too much. Like many, I view language as the most sophisticated expression or behavior of the human being. Thus our focus on it. We all know the truth, or at least a truth, so we all have language or verbal comportment that is fresh and exciting. And of course we are creative entities, so it is a new thinker's task to transliterate what she has learned into what she can teach, to put it anew, so to speak. All experiences improve us, even, God forbid, brain damage. Experientiality, in other words, equals education. And the active kinds, like writing, far beat out the passive ones. Why does one need to write? Against the odds, I do believe that, to some extent, we should follow our visions on Earth. My vision, in the grandest, most human sense of the word, was to write. It was always the highest aspiration I could conceive. Can linguistic behavior, verbal comportment, be usefully taught? Not rhetoric, not creative writing, not acting. I don't know, but why shouldn't we give it a try? Musicality is what seems to matter. Technical choices do not matter as much. This is why technique, technicality, are a matter of choice, of style. It does not matter as much how you reach, but that you reach. You eventually experiment with all methods of techne. They come to be natural components of one's linguistic artifice, one's crafted response to history and life. Vision. It is a kind of map or cognitive graph of a relationship between yourself and an omega point. An omega point can be thought of as a telos, where one is in control of nature to the extent that one tried to get there and did indeed succeed. Absolutely listening in minuscule detail to what the actual music really is. Effacement, reification processes represent the process of consciousness. That is, consciousness happens again, both making itself real and erasing its unchosen options, paths. Symbols of mental comportment, the traces, the traits writers leave behind. Verbal comportment, almost an oxymoron. The verbal is comportment to the extent that one is aware of what attitude exactly one is representing, one's intentional stance, as opposed to more unconscious, semi-automatic language behavior. Writing is an endless series of choices. This is why grading people is painful. You are, in a sense, devaluing, or at least correcting, who they are. Different levels of writing can be achieved. It's not an either-or. When you study to become a philosophical actor, a symbolic practitioner, as it were, you are in a sense choosing which past part of yourself to evaluate and which vision to dream. to make one's style of comportment so artificial that it becomes natural. This seems to be what you did. Psychic, psychotic. Are there dualities at all? Homo heterogeny. Homo ontogeny says we all follow law. Heterophylogeny says our histories are each unique. Homo phylogeny says we all tend toward death. Hetero ontogeny says choice of past futures. Psychotopology as science. Why here psychotopology? Such a funny sounding word. Because it is necessary and it means what it says. It is the logic of the surfaces of the self. The logic of the psyche itself, on the other hand, psychology, has been outdated in schizophrenia. The fact of schizophrenia puts everything we knew of thinking, of ratio, into question. But thankfully, we can still discuss surfaces with assurance. This is because they are real, they are shapes observable. The psyche and what determines it, its determinativity, on the other hand, are always hypotheses, causes. Kant himself admitted he was not expert in magic, in the evocation of causal mechanisms, when all we have to know are their effects. Of course, apart from the psyche, psychosis is likewise something for which the cause cannot be known. Correlations exist, but to work back and nail down a causal mechanism will only take place when mind is reduced to mechanism. Never. This is not just a matter of complexity. Though the brain has more interconnections than Earth's entire digital communications network, this alone would not be a barrier to finally understanding. More so, it has to do with the fact that between the psyche and the brain exists a gap of sorts, a substantial difference. The psyche topology is one of shapes, while the brain is instead a thing of objects. There is a difference. Space 1 versus space 2. The space of consciousness versus the space of neuroatomic function. In both of these head spaces in opposition to space 3, the normal space of externality. This is why when philosophers of mind say consciousness is not spatial, they might partially be on the right track. Why this now? Why me here? Is it simply because atypical antipsychotic medicines let schizophrenics speak now? By speak, I mean speak the language of reason as such, as conceived by statistical norms. That is no doubt a large part of this idea's genesis, but perhaps the flower of this new reason grows not from a why, but for a wherefore. That is, I am not writing from some truth or substance because of some historical determinativity or causal factor. I am writing for a purpose, a telos. As we know, the logic of ends is hairy and cannot be summarized here. There is no normal anymore means that psychosis is the baseline or starting point for analysis, and we may as well call the healthy mind not normal but anpsychotic. For it is obvious to see when someone is fully psychotic, while on the other hand, full sanity is somehow difficult to diagnose. If the science of psychology itself, and personally having a psychology, have been replaced, wherefore and with what? Why would I, as a schizophrenic, propose a topology of the psyche, and no longer simply a logic? Maybe because psychology always seemed ad hoc, thrown together, unsystematic, experimental, and opinion-bound, but this is not a random string of assertions. I have my reasons. For one, a logic, an axiomatic and supposedly coherent system of any kind, tends only to tell you what you already know, while a tautology instead shows you things. Logics are like computers, which can juggle input to produce neat-looking output, but can never transcend their input conditions. And their programs and very structures are parts of these conditions. How is topology different? To the extent that a surface, as beauty or truth, as product of artists or divinity, can embody expressions, give light to essences, in a way which opens a new reality onto the world. Indeed, you may say, logical structures can be beautiful. And what is psychotopology, if not also a logic? But surfaces, which can be symbolized by their ultimate manifestation, the guise of the other, surpass diagrams, no matter whom is judging. As well, their logic is not meant to be more logical even than psychology. It is instead more honest. Nothing in the way of truth, naked or not, is excluded. We have to admit there is often little logic to the real self, especially the self in its schizophrenic guises. The fantasy of the brain, a symptom of both psychosis and anpsychosis, is not so readily modeled as is the working of microchips, the model supposedly of all proper ratio. And surely we have all dreamt at night of worlds unbecoming propriety or justice. Even if one thinks otherwise, one can never see psychology, the self, no matter where one introspectively looks. Indeed, this invisible identity could be said to be the self's prime characteristic. We don't know what it is, we know as it is. We can't see it, we see as it, we are it. Our psychotopology, however, is here admitted the perceptible shape of the self. To think of fantasies, languages, and bodies as shapes of mind is to make a quantum leap beyond the abstract analysis of posited minds. A body has to do with the mind because the felt soma is a projection of the mind, an extension, if you will, of the cognitive space. And language, no matter how external, is but a symbology wrapping up consciousness. Likewise, fantasy's internality just speaks of how close this shape is in the mind's ultimate collection of shapes. Finally, keep in mind the many things psychology never accounts for. In a true science, all the mind's variability is thinkable. We may need to let the narratives of psychotopology explain what cognitive science's neuroatomic mechanisms cannot. Here are some of the extreme realities. Psychedelic drug tripping. An exclusion of reality, or layer of patterns over reality. Objectivity, a depersonalization, a getting beyond our own voices. Genovian primals, entrances into potential consciousness. Multi-mind consciousness, letting go of unity. Fictionality, it exists as if it is real. One may sense a contradiction. Why worry about the self if it cannot be said to verifiably exist? On the other hand, why rave about the mentalization of everything, which is another way of saying that only the self exists to any given self? Even though we here claim internality as the most real thing, this is not solipsism. To see this, examine the statement more closely. Internality is the psychotopology's inside, or the self, if you will. To say it is the most real is only to say that executivity, agency, or praxis is the most powerful or seductive quality one would want, or that one could have. And to say it is a thing is only to reference its existence and boundaries. God is everything or God is nothing mean the same thing. They both say not that God transcends the world, but that the world transcends God. God, in other words, is the a priori, the that which always never was is to be. We cannot know God, only God's work, which is the world. Does this make sense? It is the only sensible way to talk about the origins of sense. It is the only meaningful way to ponder what pre-exists meaning. It is the only of logic, which of that which has to be metalogical. We live with inescapable help. Even if true isolation is a dream, there is no existence without sociality. Utter dependency, not utter supremacy, is found in the statement, I am the subject of my world. And no matter how well known this world can be, philosophy admits kinship with fiction. Of course, they are both symbolic, but this is the most superficial of identities. Although philosophy addresses a different psyche than fiction does, they both could be utterly delusional, especially when consciousness is at stake. Philosophy of consciousness, what analysts call the positing of models of mentality, can only be an exercise in magicality, magical thinking. It is much better to leave the mental alone and think about coherent or not reality, or even reality's transcendencies, though this term implies that these things, wherever they are now, somehow began in the world. Our world has to be an imprint or projection of the God's will, a God who did not begin bound to laws, bound to anything we know of reality. Likewise, our psychology is an expression or introjection of our psychotopology. Psychology tends to get lost in itself, in its illusions and speculated psychic energies, perhaps since, as system, all its parts must mesh, even while some of these parts are incoherent. On the other hand, psychotopology is never lost. It is bound to grasp an explicit external or internal reality, and as writing, it is amazing construction of mazes and processes for consciousness to traverse. Only you have access to an instance of mind. Singularity is unique. But we all have access to minds, shapes, soma, logos, symbol, desire. Language's instrumentality, for example, is necessary not to be a writer or actor, but to be a human in general. The thinker or scientist learns about everything, not to be expert, but to better relate to the full spectrum of subjectivity. The subject is sometimes psychotic, embodying its energy in strange creations, so an open science must tangle with these creations. There are, nor could there be, no good general models of human development. We develop all along unique lines. As each fiction realizes a different world, each analysis must use different methods. Humans get novel input, which no model can integrate. And philosophy is no more foundational than fiction, not because it is fictional, but because its linguistic nature is interpreted symbolically, with respect to desire as all life or nature is interpreted. Only the God knows what mind is, but mortals all perceive mind's shapes in a consensual manner, I might add. Unlike in phenomenology, psychotopology is a structure woven with threads of the sensible world. Though unlike consciousness philosophy, here we do not posit causes of our mentality, origins of mind. It would be an impossible descriptive struggle to explain what we are, instead of just exploring the ways of being ourselves. As a vector cannot point to itself, a logic of psychic shapes cannot lift the veil of logic's psyche. In other words, a fluxion can exert forces while being blissfully ignorant of the substance which comprises it. We no longer make models, nor do we describe the psychic essence. Instead, we develop narratives which are highly variable and infinitely permeable to pain or glee or psychosis. Since psychosis, a disorder of shapes, is on a continuum with anpsychosis, there must be more to reality than that which highly rational philosophy dreams of. Shapes are in the mind, as the mind, and the mind. Those defending true belief rule out wild speculation, but humans, as opposed to their text systems, are naturally speculative. The focus is no longer the mind, but instead the mind's shape. This is natural, and it is science, the perceptive approach to how things really are. This is a system of the vision of shapes, finally, as opposed to the positing of objects. Objects are out there in the beyond, forever unreachable, even if we are inside them. Touch or physical contact is an expansion of potentiality, a contacting our own soma. And since we see our eyes as well as our cortex, consciousness has a multiple nature. Interiority is big enough to allow for multiple psychologies, as I will later explain. We point our thoughts toward things, and they are permeated with consciousness. Consciousness exists, logic exists, but its topos is more fruitfully considered. This is normative, like language itself, which demands interpretation and understanding. It is a mentalization of space, shapes, of everything. The outside of psychotopology is the world, and we know, even in war, inner struggle is hardest. The world is the theater, full of phenomena which we do not float above epiphenomenally, but which we are caught between interphenomenal life forms all. As we seek change, psychotopology seeks convolution and involution. The buck doesn't stop. There is no fixed origin to psyche or to general things. Time-space is filled by visibility and shapes projected by the soma, the nervous system, in a play of discrete significance. This is why culture, usually an anti-graphic regime of behaviors and informations, protects privacy with invisibility, but at the same time destroys truth. Denial of sexuality is a death of vision, whose birth is a beautiful birth of truth. Law cannot change, and mechanisms which are law-bound can only be unconscious, but the psychotopos can change. As this change is unpredictable, there is no need to theorize a lack of freedom, a determinism which is only thought, not felt. The fact of addiction exists when substance controls us. So apparently the psyche can be determined, but this determinativity is an ever-changing psychotopology, which one could say we are addicted to. The infinite totality changes or controls our psychology by proposing new experiments and by changing what is visible. Thus, thinkers want truth to be a beautiful statement, explicit of a coherent intellectual position. This is realism. It is not a limited mimesis or exclusive representation, and we leave behind a sick poverty of the imagination. The objects of life and thought are fair game. Texts, programs, are edicts, normative, so I cannot tell you in one phrase what the whole text is really saying. Just as your life is not reduced to a moment of it, each of us has our program or agenda for whatever reason. My own experience with substances and addictionality. I thought I wanted to be psychotic and need to hear voices. They soon told me, no one's hearing what. Is anyone with? I've questioned my executivity because dreams can be quite good experiences, even when characterized by extreme epiphenomenality. I wonder if life was also this way without or not. Yes, they can take your mind away, but also you are always subject to the subjectedness in this executivity, phantom is a world comprised psychotopology, the logic of the inner and outer shape of the mind. 2, 1.